You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
Mid-range value strategies.
You are 100% incorrect.
Achievement unlocked, Brian.
A silver bullet for almost everything.
What we want whenever we wanted it.
Too little, too late, and people have quit Magic forever because it's ruined.
We don't like something, we're just going to cry until Wizards changes its mind.
Which is a flavor fail completely.
Well, I'd like to thank all the little people out there.
Oh, you brave soul, about to unfurl a new episode of TryHards. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. One of us is wearing a brightly polished crown. One of us is a little older than the last time we talked to each other. And one of us is on the outside looking in at both of those historic achievements. Coming up, we'll dive into PT Rivals, what tech was unveiled, and why was this more interesting than many thought it would be at the outset. We'll figure out if it's worth looking forward to Dominaria already, and what's come back, and why won't players be satisfied with it. It's all on this episode of TryHards. Birthday boy, what are you drinking to celebrate this week?
One of the benefits of having a birthday is that people buy you good beer because it's an easy present to get you. I have such a plethora of things to choose from. I am settling on the Deschutes Brewery Obsidian Stout. And my, oh my, I made a good choice this evening, gentlemen.
Matt, what are you drinking?
I had the family down for the last week. They brought something else back with them, and that would be stomach flu. So... Lord and I, Lord and I have been not feeling so hot since about Saturday when we went to play bingo Saturday night. So I've decided to do the Kentucky Mule warm, heat up the ginger beer just a little bit, and then you heat up the bourbon before you mix them together, and then you put a little lime. But it's basically a warm Kentucky Mule, really, really good.
You're like a squeeze of lemon and some honey away from a hot toddy. Just go for it.
I can't do the overwhelming lemon, though. That's what kills me.
Well, then just don't put in as much. It's not rocket science, although we can cover that, too, here on TryHards. Right. In honor of Brian's birthday this week, I thought we'd all get angry together and bond. So I'm drinking a rye IPA. Rye beer, if you don't know,
has like the
side effect of getting Brian what I like to call ride up. Table flips are now on the menu and anything else that goes along with it. So the Divided Sky Rye IPA this evening. What magic did you guys play? Brian, I know you had the birthday week. Were you able to carve out some time during the snowstorm in Galesburg and play some magic?
I was. I actually am going to go out on a limb here and say I probably played more magic, paper magic, than you two combined. I was able to get together with some of the guys who wanted to test some standard decks in this kind of Brewer's Paradise of the new format with Rivals of Ixalan post-bannings, etc. Sean, I was able to trot out that kind of rug pummeler list I've been brewing for a little while. It didn't go well. Playing against some form of Grixis energy and some form of Grixis control and then some form of approach of the Second Sun decks did not go well. All of those have answers to creatures. Settle the Wreckage is a real magic card when you're just trying to attack, and it seems to crop up at all the worst times. The energy decks just seem to have answers for everything. So I'm not down on it. The guys were kind of impressed with how resilient the deck could be. But right now in the metagame, I'm not thinking it's a go-to. Mid-range, I think, is just going to be the flavor for the next couple of months until somebody gets off their butt and does it.
Brian, the first list that you started working on was blue-green. Why did you decide to add the red instead of testing your original creation?
Well, two reasons. The first one, that deck really did suffer, I think, from the loss of a tune. So instead of a tune and trying to get down early with energy, I went to Greenbelt Rampager. And Greenbelt Rampager can be a very, very strong magic card if you can get it down on turn two. It just dies a lot to Fatal Push, has a weird tension with the energy you're trying to accumulate for the pummeler. But the real reason I went to splashing red was you could make your pummeler huge, but it couldn't trample over. And so I was looking to red to kind of give it that last trample damage. Larger Than Life is a great green card, and it was in both lists. But Invigorated Rampage was the red card I thought was going to kind of seal the deal. And it did do work. I was trampling for 12, 13, 14 with Long Tusk Cubs and Bristling Hydras and some other things, but just couldn't get it, you know, to kind of be as consistent as I wanted it to. So I still think it's a fun deck to build, maybe play around with and see if it's got a shot at maybe spiking an FNM here or there.
So what was the card that was really just doing you in? Or was it just that all the other decks were tuned better than yours?
Well, I definitely think the decks were tuned better than mine, but with the players I was playing against, they said if I hadn't had that opening hand with the two fatal pushes, this would have gone a lot differently. You know, when they would take care of my one drop or two drop with fatal pushes, and they're building their board up to a Scarab God on turn four, and I'm looking at a lonely Long Tusk Cub, that's a little bit of a different game. So that can get out of hand real fast if you've got a really linear style. I was definitely behind most of the time.
So I think that it probably suffers from the same thing that I guess the blue-green merfolk decks kind of suffer from. Seems very linear, like you just want to kind of go all in on your pummeler, you know, and just hit him for a massive amount of damage, and you're attacking decks that basically have a silver bullet for almost everything. Do you feel like that's where the format is?
Yeah, I kind of feel like the format, like I said, is just going to be stuck in mid-range mode for a very long time. It'll probably jump up to control here and there as well, because I think the Grixis control list is very strong. But mid-range, with its massive amounts of interaction and removal, plus the closers are so good right now. Scarab God, Glorybringer, Whirlier Virtuoso. Those can just completely gum up boards and apply so much pressure. It's really, really hard with a linear strategy to get past that. Now, the one card that I did include that I was able to use a couple times to fun effect was Fling. If you can power up your pummeler, attack with it, and if they go to exile it or go to fatal push it or whatever, and you can fling it, I think that's a pretty good play. But that seems like you don't want to make that your, you know, play du jour.
If Fling's not doing lethal damage, it never feels good to multiple for one yourself and leave your opponent still alive on the other side of the line.
We did have a lot of fun. It was good to test out with some decks. Mr. Dave Nash, who just loves to brew mid-range value strategies, put together some ridiculously gross kind of Sultai Planeswalker deck that he was just crushing with. Since when is Bug Friends, you know, a thing? Nissa and Liliana, you know, new Jace. It was just kind of doing all kinds of things. I said, I'm not even going to deal with that right now. It just looks a little silly. Hopefully he can tune that, because I think it would be really fun to see him go to a tournament and see what that could do. Saturday, my friend Eric Hoffman had a birthday, not too far from mine. And his birthday, rightfully so, as a good gamer, was to play some cards. So we went over and drafted Michael Bergman's Peasant Cube, which was a ton of fun. And I hadn't drafted a Peasant Cube before, but yeah, it was a really, really good time. Drank some beers and generally was a better person for it.
Well, Hurley, I think he won because he played more Magic than the two of us together. I played none while I was on the road and you played none. So we'll just give this gift to Brian for his birthday.
He needs something after that horrible Pro Tour experience he had.
Here we go.
Now you're teasing. I love the foreshadowing, but there is some statistical relevance to what Matt is bringing up, and we'll get to that in just a bit. That's the Magic we played this week. We hope you played and had a great time doing it. It's time for another Patreon raffle, guys, and this week Brian is going to not only get the gifts for his birthday, but give the gifts. When I saw what you were giving away, Brian, my heart wept a little bit, both with tears of joy because I've been on the other side of this card from you for decades now, and with the unbelievable notion that you would actually part with this an original first printing Antiquities Millstone. When we first got into playing Magic, Brian quickly gravitated toward mill strategies. And I can't tell you how many times I sat on the other side of the table and had him go, mill you for two, mill you for two. It's just, I still hear that voice sometimes when I'm falling asleep. So very cool. Matt, you tell me we've got 52 eligibles. Matt has the list. I have the official Tryhards randomizer and 17.
17 is Michael Barnes. It looks like he's been a subscriber for about 6 months or so. So, Michael, congratulations.
We appreciate it, Michael. We'll be getting in touch with you. And you are now the sweet owner of, what's that worth, Brian, about $3, that Antiquities Millstone?
Might be a little north of $4, but yeah, Yeah, 4 to 5.
Oh, wait, but... don't get crazy with it.
And more importantly, Michael, what you're actually getting is a piece of Brian's soul. He's played these for so long that I can't believe that he's letting one go. All right, we'll do it again coming up in just a couple of weeks. Another Patreon raffle. That brings us up to this week's news. The tournament of the weekend, well, it was a Pro Tour. Pro Tour rivals of Ixalan brought 465 qualified players to Bilbao, and it was 9 that we had our eyes on after the draft last week. Matt, congratulations. You had the foresight to pick the team of Baumeister, Chun, and Thompson. Thompson was the only one of our picks who finished in the top 50. You had the only two players, Baumeister and Thompson, who finished in the top 100. And, of course, this is golf scoring, so lowest score is best score with a score of 402. Matt has tied it up. He now has 3 titles. Brian has 3 titles. And I have just one. My field of Shearer, Nass, and Serrani didn't cash in on what I thought the upside was when I took that team. And Brian's team of the world number one, Seth Manfield, Sam Black, and Brad Nelson, earned Brian a brand new achievement. Achievement unlocked, Brian. You now have the new, quote, high score in the history of Pick'em. You beat my previous high score of 798 back in Pro Tour Kaladesh. You now have tied for the lead in titles and also the worst score ever recorded in the game. So congratulations. Brian, you were last with 836. I had 706, so not much to brag about there. And Matt won it with a 402 as Chun didn't have a great weekend. And he kind of piled on most of that score between Baumeister at 75 and Thompson at 2. So, Matt, the floor is yours. Champion for the weekend at Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan here on the Tryhards Pick'em.
Well, I'd like to thank all the little people out there.
Oh, for the
No, actually, everyone's logic was sound in saying that the SCG grinders had the biggest advantage here because this was their format, essentially. This is not, you know, typically a pro format. And I will say, I'll use my time at the podium to say this. If you think anything from Lantern Control needs to be banned because of power level, you are 100% incorrect. Darren Forsyth said it, just because a single deck wins a tournament doesn't mean something needs to be banned from it.
This top 8 was outstanding, Brian. Luis Salvato, who won it, was on Lantern Control. Jerry Thompson on Mardu Pyromancer. Pascal Varen on Blue-Red Pyromancer. Ken Yukihiro on Black-Red Hollow One. That deck's a lot of fun to watch. Javier Dominguez on Five Color Humans, along with Andrea Mangucci. You had Juan Emmanuel Dupraz on Traverse Shadow and Reed Duke on Abzan. This was a ton of fun to watch until they turn the camera on the hard lock that is Lantern Control. And the tournament slowed to nearly nothing. Now, for those who think chess is an interesting, fast-moving game with pace, Lantern Control is probably the deck for you. But for Salvato to navigate this top 8 with the particular matchups that he had, to me just shows you what a master of the format and master of this deck that he is. And I'm always interested in watching the best go about their business.
Salvato piloted this deck so well, made the kind of plays that you look at and you're like, oh, that was an easy one. And then you look back and you're like, oh my God, if he hadn't done that here 4 turns later, he could have lost the game because of this and that. And, you know, what he was drawn to and what the opponent could have drawn to. It was really, really great to see the skill level and the technical play of Salvato. The deck I'm not a fan of. I don't think it's ban worthy in any way, shape or form. I don't think anything out of that deck needs to be banned. So I'm definitely on board with that. But it is not good Magic viewing. This is the guy who used to play Mono White Prison, y'all. I am not a fan of non-interactive Magic. Maybe this is just me and my old man-ish ways now getting the best of me. But I don't know what you guys think. But it just doesn't seem to be like you're playing a game. It just seems like you're on the other side of the table playing solitaire. And your opponent is trying to interact with, like, Rummy. And you're just kind of ignoring them. There's a tension there. It doesn't make for a great experience to watch, but you have to hand it to him. He did it masterfully, and he deserved it. So hats off to Luis Salvato.
I like the fact that this deck is in the format because it keeps other decks honest in a way. You have to be prepared to interact or you're just going to lose. This deck is eminently beatable if you set out to do just that. but at what cost in your other matchups? Matt, humans was expected to be the breakout deck, with some reports saying it could be as much as 20% of the field. It ended up being about 10% of the field, but in a format as diverse as modern, that's still a huge chunk of the pie. It was the only deck that put two copies of itself into the top eight. Is there a financial opportunity here on humans, and is it in the land base? Because none of the actual humans seem to be that overwhelming.
Aether Vials. Although I did see a bunch of humans that were cutting the Aether Vials. I'd be a liar if I said I did not try and negotiate a deal for four German foil original Aether Vials on eBay. And I was like, should I order these? Should I not? I ended up erring on the side of caution just because I'm like, you know, they're Aether Vials. I don't think they're going to get reprinted because they were just reprinted. I don't think it would hurt if they reprinted them, but I don't think that Watsy had enough foresight to really say, oh, yeah, you know, they're going to still be $20 or $30 cards wherever they're at currently. As far as the humans just look a lot of fun. A lot of them went over to Phantasmal Image, which added a lot. Out of all the tribes, I'd have to say it's probably the only tribe that has interactive tribal drops. The 1-2 flyer that dresses them. Reflector Mage. You have Meddling Mage. You have all these cards that are interactive drops and are kind of silver bullets for just about everything. And no other tribe in modern, I believe, has the ability to do that. The format was looking awesome. I will say that. Brian, I agree with you. It's not good viewing Magic. If I sat somebody down during that Jerry T game when he's playing against Luis in the finals and, you know, he has, what was it, 20 creatures on the battlefield and his opponent has zero and has like six permanents on the field. Why is that guy winning? I don't understand how he's winning. What's going on here? So I think that's a little bit of an issue. If they were to ban something, and that's a big if they were to ban something, it would be purely because of viewability issues, and they would just have to drop Lantern because everything else in that deck is, you know, used in elsewhere within Modern. Of course, we got to see some sweet, sweet tech with – I shouldn't say even tech because we've run it before, but we've seen some sweet tech with the Bedlam Revelers as well, and that's a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, get your Revelers now. Who knows how high they'll go after that performance this weekend. For me, the deck of the tournament was absolutely Mardu Pyromancer, not just in the hands of Jerry T, but it got the most exposure in those hands with him being in the top eight. Although I did learn one other thing, and that was play what you know. Reed Duke took Abzan without any special tech in it, and oh yeah, powered his way into the top eight as well. Play what you know. If the Mardu Pyromancer deck was the deck of the tournament, Goblin Lore has to be the card of the tournament, right? I mean, who would have banked Goblin Lore being the card of this tournament? But when you've got things like Black Red Hollow One attempting to do their thing, Brian, it makes for an interesting and wide open field.
That was a really, really fun interaction, and I think it just showed the power of looking at a card and saying, well, that doesn't look like it does anything for five. That just seems kind of silly. And then you see somebody discard three and maybe discard another two, and you're churning out these things for, you know, one or zero. It becomes silly. I really like how it doesn't really even care what cards go to the graveyard, kind of like Dredge does. Dredge, you know, when you're putting everything in the graveyard, you're hoping to hit something. You're hoping to hitting a Dredger, something that's going to enable the rest of your deck. This doesn't care what goes to the graveyard because you've already got the gas in your hand to just hit the battlefield and start swinging in. So there was a very devil may care attitude about that deck that I really, really did like. I don't know if that's going to be a deck that is great going forward, though. It seems like that's a deck that can really be stoned to a lot of different things. I'd love to play against it. I'd love to see how it interacts and try to kind of develop a sideboard. I love the tech. I love how somebody approached that, and it was a great choice for the weekend.
Matt said something interesting during his time at the podium after claiming his crown, and that was Watsy issuing the statement that just because something wins a Pro Tour doesn't mean that there's going to be a ban. Obviously, you can't just ban something from the latest winning deck every time. That's not the way it works, and I hope that they are not at the point where they simply want to make adjustments for viewability, because in my mind, if the team that makes the game loses sight of just making a great game and starts to alter it for viewability, then you can be on a slippery slope. Magic is great on its own, and it will be great on its own as long as the game is continued to be made well by those who are in charge of doing that in Renton. That was this weekend's Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan 465. And they were all fantastic matches. Matt, something that caused the Magic crowd to collectively seemingly lose their minds, which is frankly, too easy to do these days, is coming back. But will it appease those who had been wanting their F&M foils? This news broke this week, and you were on top of it. What do you know about the timeline, and is this going to be welcomed with open arms, or is this too little too late and people have quit Magic forever because it's ruined?
As a lot of people know, they changed from F&M foils, foil cards, over to F&M foil tokens. They have a really good foil, like, you know, Fatal Push. I'm going to be much more inclined to get off my lazy ass and go actually play Magic. Not because I don't enjoy the game, but because I'm like, okay, I can sit here, and I'm, you know, I play online. I'm like, I can play a couple matches online. If I know my friends are going down, hey, you know, maybe I'll go down there and get a Fatal Push, whatever. It did make a difference for me, and it was like a 1% difference. The tokens were kind of, as a whole, just said, eh. 2 weekends ago when I was playing, they just said, who wants these tokens? And they laid them in a pile instead of people, like, clamoring to them. They just literally laid there because it was, like, treasure tokens and a couple other things. So some of the people were excited, but most people were like, eh, I don't really care about that. Well, with Dominaria, they're bringing back the foil cards. The reason they said, and it's a good reason, they said that they couldn't keep up on top of cards quickly enough to present good cards for F&M. So essentially they're saying we could not pick out what cards were going to be good and desired quick enough. And they said with the play design team, this new play design team, they had alleviated that problem. So with Dominaria, they're coming back with them. Well, my question here is, if that was always the plan, why in the hell did they not just announce that originally and just say, hey, guys, we can't keep up with what's good, what's not. Instead of providing a sub-quality feature here, we're going to present you with these tokens that we know people are going to use. Don't worry, F&M foil promos are coming back once we have something in the tank. I'm not saying that will have appeased everyone, but increase your visibility a little bit. It's not a big top-level secret. Who really cares? That's not a big one. Applaud the decision. I understand now, looking back, you know, hindsight is 20/20, why they made the original decision. I think it was a good one originally, but they should have been a lot more transparent with it.
I wish Wizards would stop this pendulum swing of every decision they make.
Every
decision they make, they say, oh, well, we listen to the community. And as Sean alluded to, it doesn't matter if they stick $100 bills in Magic packs. They're going to be like, well, they weren't as crisp as I was hoping they'd be, or yeah, only $100 bills. Why not more? I feel like Wizards made a choice to go with F&M promos. They had to know there was going to be a little bit of a backlash. Are they just kind of putting something out there and then they just wait for the crickets to pop up? Are they waiting, you know, on Reddit just for the feedback to kind of roll in? And then they say, oh, shoot, God, we got to change something. That's no business model. That is no customer service model to follow. I think if they would just kind of get behind it and just say, yeah, we're going to do this for 18 months, whatever it is, and then, yeah, we'll reevaluate, but it's going to last for at least this long, people would quiet down a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
But now that we, as Magic players, have gotten kind of what we want whenever we wanted it, all we're going to do is we're going to be like that little kid throwing a tantrum. If we don't like something, we're just going to cry until Wizards changes its mind. And then Wizards is going to respond because that's what we're used to Wizards doing. I don't think that's a tenable situation that you want to be in as a company.
It'll be interesting to see where this goes and how it all plays out. One thing that we are getting for a treat, and that is the very beginnings of the reveal of Masters 25. Now, they're not spoilers anymore. That's not PC. They're previews. They previewed Azusa, Lost But Seeking, Jace the Mind Sculptor, and the best card of all time, Phyrexian Obliterator. So once you have those three as your baseline, well, I tell you what I saw instantly is they might as well have just put Path to Exile on the preview list, because if you don't print Path, Obliterator is just a completely unfair Magic card in that set.
Everybody was kind of saying, oh, this needs a reprint. And I'm thinking, is there any more casual great Magic card out there than Phyrexian Obliterator?
Oh, no.
It had a hot minute in the sun, but golly, nobody's playing a 4-black 5/5 that does what it does in tournament Magic level decks. But my goodness, in Commander and things, is the demand this high for this card?
Oh, I would say absolutely.
Yeah, it was a $25, $30 card for a long time.
Yeah,
it still is. It absolutely still is. I just don't play as much EDH Commander as the rest of the world. But I haven't seen one of these hit the tables, because if I did, I might just have to have that moment to go get a pee break and actually just go throw up just because it's so hard to play against.
I don't even think it's Commander. I think it's the purely casual. People think, you know, people forget, what's their percentage of sales that they have at Walmart for people who buy barely any cards? They just go buy a few packs here and there. And then they build and they're like, oh, I have this sweet mono black deck. I think that's a much higher percentage than people lead on.
There's no new art for Jace the Mind Sculptor. We now have the second reprint. So now there's three sets with the same art of Jace the Mind Sculptor.
No, that card is essentially the face of the Magic brand, even though it's banned in everything that isn't Legacy or Vintage at this point. That card is, for all intents and purposes, the brand image that many people think of, most people think of, when they think Magic. I don't think you can change the art on that card.
No, yeah. I think I'm with you there. Azusa Lost But Seeking, I like the new artwork. I think it's really nice. But again, I'm always shocked at how high that card is, just because it's not played but in a couple of fringe decks, correct?
It's played in Amulet Titan and Scape Shift Titan or whatever it is.
Titan Shift. Which is a tier one modern deck for sure. So I don't know what kind of things can we take from these three reveals. Is there anything else that we can learn from this? Sean, you alluded to it. We're going to have some kind of hard removal for something like Phyrexian Obliterator in the set. Path to Exile, already been reprinted, not enough. I think it's going to have to be something like Swords.
Well, it'll be interesting. I don't think if they'll go Swords, they could, because it's just a master set. But there is a card that's been printed since Obliterator had its hot moment in the sun, as you said, Brian, that will hit it now, and that's Fatal Push. Because even though it's four black, it's still four. So you can revolt and Fatal Push an Obliterator, which is a flavor fail completely. I don't think that should be allowed. To me, this is just one of those iconic, fun cards that, because Wizards put so many stops in, it was almost the opposite side of the way that they think now. They knew that Obliterator could be a card that just ran amok in the game, and so they printed lots of answers to it in the format that it was in, so it never really got out of the box. You know what's a great combo? Your Phyrexian Obliterator and your opponent playing creatures. All right, that's a combo right there. You can just cash in on the synergy of creatures doing battle. And that's really fun Magic. And as Brian has said, it's frightening when you're on the other side of the table. So I think it's going to be fun. This is just three splashy mythics that they rolled out at the very, very, very beginning of the reveal for Masters 25. So it'll be interesting to see what else is in the set as it continues to be revealed going forward. What a year it's going to be for Minneapolis, by the way. They host the Super Bowl, and then they're going to host Pro Tour 25. By the way, this weekend, GP Toronto coming up. That'll be modern. So if you want to put your Lantern Control deck together and head up to America's Hat, you can go and try it out and see how that's going to go for you. That's bringing us up to this week's In the Elevator Ride. Matt's been thinking about old cards with tough templating, and now we're in the elevator with Quirion Ranger. Matt, why'd you pick this one?
So Quirion Ranger now is about a $3 card. It's shooting up because Popper. It's just a really old card, and they printed the Forerunners in Ixalan. This card's difficult to print in the current formatting. They may reprint it in, like, maybe Masters 25, but I doubt it. This card, I think it has a lot of room to go up. It's slowly getting bought out. I wouldn't be surprised to see in Dominaria a functional reprint of this that's easier to template. Quirion Ranger's a powerful one.
Quirion Ranger in the elevator this week here on Tryhards. It's time to brew. Let's pick up some sweet card that you've never heard of before, well, other than Goblin lore, and figure out if it's going to be good or not. Brian, what do we got to brew with this week?
Common from Kaumagawa. This is a card, guys. I think I was so taken aback by the effect of drawing cards and discarding cards. I was looking at this type of interaction, and especially in modern legal cards, and seeing what else I could come up with. And this is a card that I've played before. I can't even remember what format it was, but it's a card that intrigues me a lot. So, Ideas Unbound. 2 blue, sorcery, arcane. Draw 3 cards. Discard 3 cards at end of turn. I'm very, very intrigued by this because the discard effect does not happen immediately after you draw, a la Faithless Looting or a la Fanatical Ravings. This is a card that I think has some brew space because of the lapse between the drawing and the discarding. So, Sean, where would you take Ideas Unbound?
What I'm actually interested in this doing is seeing if it can replace Treasure Cruise in the red, blue, aggro burn style decks in Legacy or maybe in Modern. Treasure Cruise was great because for 1 mana, you could draw 3 utilizing the Delve mechanic and then just unload those very low cost efficient spells. Lightning Bolt. Maybe you want to opt. Now, you're not going to want any cards in your hand when the final trigger goes off. So if you can drop some one-drop creatures, maybe a Delver, maybe a Swift Spear, you can burn your opponent with those cards you draw. As long as they're not in your hand, there is no punishing trigger off of this. So in my mind, the first place that I would try it out, Ideas Unbound, in that old blue-red Delver burn list in place of Treasure Cruise, and see what kind of results you get after that quick surge of cards.
Hurley, would you take it in something as aggressive as that, or do you think it's got a whole nother angle that you want to brew with?
In some type of combo deck. I mean, that's where it naturally looks to me, and I think you want to pair it up with some other arcane spells. I didn't play during this time frame, so I'm not super familiar with a lot of the arcane spells. I think a lot of them are actually probably unused for just that splice into arcane ability. That's where I think it's at, and I really, really like the whole draw three cards, then you don't have to discard till at the end of turn. So if we got like a high tide style mechanic or something like that, I think that's where the combo would be.
This, to me, guys, this is the gas that those blue-red style decks need to really kind of pull back, even with parity or ahead, because you're just unloading so many cards at a time. And that's why Treasure Cruise was such a bomb. I think this one has great risk, great reward, because if you've got the mana to do it, cast it, draw your cards, and if you can unload those three to either win you the game, get you in a great position, drop a Bedlam Reveler, draw three more, that just seems like that's what you want to be doing. I also love that this is a common, Hurley, and I know you'll like this because this could go in Pauper decks, and there's so many good Pauper decks out there that want to draw a lot of cards, like blue-red Kiln Fiend decks. This could be a card that really puts that one almost as an unbeatable status, because if you can drop those low casting costs in the Pauper format, I don't think there's enough power on the other side of the table to kind of outdo that tempo that you're putting them under.
Ideas Unbound, this week's 3 minutes to brew here on Try Hards. That brings
that
us
was
up
a
to,
doozy.
That was a good one. I enjoyed that. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. Guys, it was real easy for me. I watched the pros play. Yeah, there was a time shift, but you could watch the rebroadcast very easily. And just seeing the attention to detail, seeing the ability to recover after a gaffe. It's always interesting to me to watch the top pros go about what they're doing. And watching the pros play was what I did to get better at Magic this week. Matt, what'd you do to get better?
Watching a lot of the pros plays. Sunday, when my family was in town, we all weren't feeling too well. Everyone's like, let's just stay in. My mom's like, I'm just going to finish up some sewing. You know, that's what she does now. She's old. So I was like, okay, well, I'll screw around online a little bit. Well, I didn't feel like staring at a computer screen actually doing anything. So I turned on the Pro Tour and laid on my futon in my office. And let me tell you, it was glorious. Seeing Jerry T communicate with his opponent and be able to call his opponent's play and say, hey, oh yeah, I know you have this. Congratulations, you won. That type of thing. I'm just like, this is awesome. Yeah, they play at such a different level than us. The other thing was the tribute to Corey McDuffie passing. Like, that really showed, hey guys, we're a community. This is what we do. It made me feel better about the game. And everyone just basically saying, hey guys, he was an upcoming pro. I don't know what happened to him. I don't think they actually released what happened to him, but it really kind of brought the whole thing into perspective where I'm like, you know, is it about being better? Or is it about being a good community member?
Hurley, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I thought was fantastic right after the McDuffie tragedy that we heard about was Todd Stevens immediately took to the stream and was trying to get donations, and every dollar he raised from his stream, he was going to donate to the family, and they ended up raising about $700 for the McDuffie family. So it is all about that community. You know, this game is bigger than a lot of people realize, and yet we have a responsibility to give back when something like that happens. So I was very, very happy to see that. So I'm glad you brought that up. Anybody who knows me knows that Young Pyromancer might be one of my favorite Magic cards. Anybody who knows me knows that Mardu is one of my absolute favorite brews in Modern. The semifinals match between Jerry Thompson and Pascal Viren was maybe perfect television for me. I had so much fun watching those play patterns and seeing what cards were drawn, which cards were going to be cast, seeing all of those full art elemental tokens hit the battlefield. It just gave me a sense of joy. And I got really, really giddy as I was doing that, because I was like, finally, these are two worthwhile decks. That blue-red Pyromancer deck that Viren was piloting, he was playing unbelievably with it all weekend and got out of some pretty sticky situations. I was really, really happy to see that a lot of my favorite cards made it into the top, you know, four of the Pro Tour. And there's something to be said for that. When you kind of have an idea and it gets that far, it kind of gives you a little boost of confidence, like, oh, this wasn't just a flash in the pan. This has something to it. I'm going to keep brewing, and I'm going to do something cool with it. So that's how I got better at Magic.
Oh, you brave soul. Sticking around for another episode of Tryhards. We'll see if we can entertain you as well next time.